Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Along with Jim Garrity of National Review, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, as usual. And we start with the good. And as usual, Jim, whenever we talk about Bernie Sanders, we're obviously talking about the good martini.
Yes. Nothing says good news like Bernie Sanders.
That's right. He's the independent, quote-unquote, an admitted socialist senator from Vermont. While he thinks that the economy is doing substantially better than when Obama took office, and I don't think there's really anybody who would disagree with that, given that we were pretty much cratering at that point after the financial crisis, the credit for the rebound can be debated. But the president basically talked about how we've recovered. It's time to turn the page. Everything's better. The economy is strong. Look at this jobless rate at mid-5%. Stock market's tripled, on and on and on. Bernie Sanders, unconvinced following the State of the Union address. Here's what he said to Mika Brzezinski on Morning Joe.
The weakest part is that there was not a full recognition that while we have made enormous progress, the reality is that real unemployment, Mika, is not 5.5%. It is 11%, including those people who have given up looking for work and are working part-time. Youth unemployment remains 18%. And as part of a 40-year trajectory, the American middle class continues to decline, and we need very bold action.
Now, Jim, I'm sure we would disagree with him on what that bold action ought to be, but at least somebody on the left has finally read about the labor participation rate.
A broad theme of the State of the Union, as we've said, is that everything that guy said is bull bleep. And it's kind of fun to see a Democrat coming along and saying this. You also saw, particularly for the last couple of years, Robert Reich as another figure on the left who is willing to say, look, the administration likes to point to these little glimmers of improvement, and they're kind of hoping that while we're looking at where they're pointing, we'll ignore the rest of the picture, which is that a lot of Americans have been hurting for a really hard time. And I think that unless you're in the fracking business, or unless you're in one of these parts of the economy that's really taken off, maybe you found a job, but maybe it's only a part-time job. The wages certainly aren't what they used to be. You don't feel particularly good about your odds for prospects of a better job or advancement or things like that. And, you know, for the long-term unemployed, it is still a bad, bad situation out there. As much as Bernie Sanders may come across as the nutty professor sometimes, he making the argument from the left that, no, it's not time, the economy isn't really doing that well. The median income is still down a couple grand from before the recession. It's useful to the argument against this administration to say, look, there are a lot of problems with the Obama administration. One is being that their solutions are totally wrong. But even when things start to go right, like the slightest glimmer of improvement, they're convinced that the work is done and that they're ready to pat themselves, sprain their arms, patting themselves on the back, instead of really looking at the full picture and recognizing that we've had a sluggish economy for a good 6-7 years now.
Yes, and the lowest labor participation rate since the Carter years. I guess it's a little bit better that they've waited for a statistic to make this inflated case for economic improvement. Usually, once the speech is done to address it, they think that it's fixed. So, you know,
good point.
Making some progress there. All right, on to the bad martini, which is an interesting twist on what was actually a pretty good martini for the most part. In Iowa over the weekend, hosted by conservatives, Congressman Steve King bringing a lot of the potential and even likely presidential candidates to talk to conservative activists and voters. Scott Walker got very good reviews. Ted Cruz was there. Marco Rubio was there. Chris Christie was there. Jeb and Mitt were not there. Two that were there are ones that the media love to talk about, Jim, but in the end, I think there might need to be a rule about discussing their likely candidacy or potential candidacy, because we all know that it's never going to happen. One is Donald Trump, who basically went there to bash Mitt and Jeb. And, of course, he's got his apprentice program going on. That's why he couldn't run in 2012, is because the apprentice season contractually obligated him to not get in until after it was too late. And then there's Sarah Palin, who obviously is much more favorable to the grassroots. But in the end, I think she sees that her position is much better where it is right now than running and potentially not winning. So the ongoing speculation of those two in particular just seems to be a waste of time.
Let's start with Trump. Longtime listeners of this podcast will know that I find him to be a huge headache, Greg. Huge! For long-standing reasons. I had found a spy magazine from 1988 that discussed that, you know, that Donald Trump was thinking about running for president. So this would mark, you know, like easily like five or six straight cycles where Donald Trump, you know, talks about he might be running and, you know, what this country needs, blah, 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 blah. And then, of course, you end up not running because he's very happy doing what he's doing. And you kind of figure, like, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me five or six times, we need a completely different political press corps. Like, this, there's just no excuse for that anymore. And there's a part of me that's not pleased that Republican and conservative conference organizers continue to treat him. I guess he's an entertaining enough speaker. I guess the crowd likes him. But, like, I mean, Gallagher smashing watermelons is, you know, people like that, too. It doesn't mean I want the guy to run for president. Although, if we ever get menaced by watermelons, I know exactly the man for the job. Also, you know, apparently his whole thing about, you know, he really ripped into Mitt Romney. It turns out he choked. Now, look, Donald Trump spent a good portion of 2012 telling us how great Mitt Romney was. And apparently, like, I'm told this morning, Karl Rove, you know, said, you accuse Mitt Romney of choking in the election. You keep choking on running, which is kind of, I think that's, you know, it just comes across as unclassy. In terms of Sarah Palin, I didn't get a chance to see it or listen to it, but apparently she gave a really long speech that meandered kind of like the Amazon and just seemed to go stream of consciousness all kinds of different directions. I'll just give a little anecdote that I was on the cruise last November. Everyone seemed to be having a good time. One cruise goer comes up and said, right at the end, and says, you know, you guys haven't mentioned Sarah Palin once up on that stage. And I'm like, yes. Basically, this guy was totally convinced she's running for president. Like, has she said she's running? And, you know, now she's said her, well, she's thinking about it. Well, we expected this in 2012. We expected, you know, we're hearing it since then. If you're serious about running for president, traditionally you hire staff, right? And you put stuff together and you start doing things beyond this bus tour she did last time where she wasn't going to tell anyone where she was going. It was going to be kind of like a sneak attack on groups of voters when they weren't expecting it. And I kept getting told, no, 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 she's going to do it differently, Jim. She's completely different. She doesn't need to do any of that kind of stuff. There are enough people who love her that this organizational structure that everybody else has needed to run for president is just going to spring up organically underneath her when she asks for it. It's going to, you know, maybe it's going to come down like manna from heaven. And then I would say, well, if she's got to do it, she'd have to do it. You know, I looked it up last cycle. And it would be like, you know, she's got to really announce and file the papers by October 2011, I think it was. I said, Jim, why does she have to do it on your timeline? Like, no, this is the state of South Carolina's timeline, right? You got to file by that day to get your name on the ballot. There is just this insistence among us that her base of support, which is significantly smaller than it was a couple of years ago, that she's running even as she does nothing that everybody else is doing to put together the infrastructure and apparatus and organizers in every county and all that kind of stuff that everybody else does. I kind of feel like at some point you got to say, all right, stop telling me you're going to run. Show me you're going to run by taking action. And for some reason, if you point this out, you're a rhino, squish, blah, you know, that kind of stuff. I'm sure I've irked many of her fans in this podcast. And remember, send your criticism to Greg Corumbus as a courtesy Radio America.
I would much rather see Palin in there than Trump. Let me definitely add that in there.
I mean, come on, that's a
not a hard bar to clear, but you know, just to clarify, I'm just still thinking about Gallagher. Maybe Secretary of Defense. You know, you paint Al Qaeda on a watermelon, and you know, you send
smash them. Yes,
you send the message.
You got to wear raincoats in the first row of a press conference.
All right, on to the crazy martini now. Drones are everywhere. You know, we kill terrorists with them. We have for quite a while. Amazon's toying with delivering packages within a half an hour after you order with drones because you can't wait for one day delivery. And of course, there's now all sorts of different media drones that people are toying with. Well, it turns out that there was a drone discovered on the White House lawn today. The Secret Service, according to CNN, is investigating after a drone crashed on the White House grounds early Monday morning. Secret Service locked down the White House shortly after 3 a.m. after an officer on the south grounds of the White House spotted the drone, described as a 2-foot-wide quadcopter, flying above the White House grounds before crashing on the southeast side of the complex. So there's obviously on lockdown. The president and first lady are in India. The first daughters and Michelle's mom were home at the time. Doesn't seem to be any particular security threat. But it does raise the question about whether we're a little bit ahead of ourselves and just what should be happening with these drones.
Basically, we're dealing with more or less the same technology as remote-controlled planes, which had been around for decades, and somehow we managed to not have these problems. So I don't know whether it's just we're a less responsible culture or they're just much more widespread and popular now. This is a crazy martini on two fronts, because you wake up, hey, drone crashes into White House is problematic and then, you know, not good to hear. Here's the, if you're a bad guy, you got to be watching this and saying, aha, you know, and the thing is, I don't know if other, you know, there's the long rumored anti-aircraft guns and missiles and stuff like that on the, that rumored to be on the top of the White House. For those who think that I'm leaking something classified, I'm basing it on the documentaries Olympus Has Fallen and White House Down. So I'm guessing that they have something up there to shoot down a plane or something incoming. You really got to wonder, you know, whether they'd have the capacity to stop a drone. And even though this one was, you know, 2 feet in diameter and nothing particularly harmful, whether somebody who wanted to start trouble or hurt the president or assault the White House, whether that would be a particularly useful, you know, method of attack for them. And you know, you think, I think we have a hard time keeping people off the lawn. We're going to have to need to build a retractable dome around the White House or something like that. So it's a crazy martini and really an ominous one, but that sneaking suspicion that this, now that it's been happened, you got to figure in the next couple of days there'll be idiot copycats. And just a sneaking suspicion that at some point the drone that comes over the White House fence won't be so harmless.
Yeah, that is definitely the concern. And Jim, we obviously don't want to belabor the Deflategate thing too much longer. A good opening skit on Saturday Night Live, I would say, in that regard. But today is an important anniversary, particularly for me, but I think you'll enjoy it anyway. It's 29 years ago today that the Chicago Bears destroyed the New England Patriots in Super Bowl 20, which is exciting to think about how bad the Patriots were at that time and how badly they'll hopefully get destroyed this week. The sad thing is it's been 29 years since the Bears won the Super Bowl.
Yeah, but at least you've been back there since then. I think it still stands as one of the iconic moments in NFL history. You guys actually – see, here's the thing. Think about the arrogance it took to do a music video with, like, a good chunk of the team singing the Super Bowl shuffle. If they had not won the Super Bowl, they would be considered the all-time big laughingstock. Yes. You know, you think giving other teams bulletin board material? They did a music video saying they would win the Super Bowl. This is right up there with Namath's Guarantee. So then my next question, as a diehard Chicago Bears fan, Greg, I'm going to put a real serious question to you, and I'm sure one that could have Bill Swirsky's super fans breaking into a fistfight.
Okay.
Did Ditka wrong Sweetness, a.k.a. Walter Payton, by not letting him run in the touchdown and instead having William the Refrigerator Perry do it?
Oh, 100% yes. I think Ditka would even admit that himself. The defense, obviously, is the main reason they won the championship that year, but if you're down on the goal line at that point, you got to give the ball to Payton. And so, yeah, that was definitely one disappointing moment from an otherwise glorious day.
It's the slightly spoiled cherry on top of a fantastic Sunday there. So, all right, you know, good agreement. Exactly what everyone expected to hear when they tuned into our podcast.
Exactly right. Easy call for me. Walter Payton's probably my favorite athlete of all time. But on to politics again tomorrow for the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Jim, we'll talk to you then.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus. Again, tune in Tuesday for the next Three Martini Lunch.